Good afternoon, folks. It's that time of the day again, time for the elephant in the room here on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. This is your host, Sam DeMarco, joined in studio as usual by my trusty executive director, Robin to my Batman, John Schneider, man of a few words.
Thanks, Sam.
Well, John, thanks for being here. And we're also joined here by our producer, dazzling, dandy, Daryl Grandy.
Good afternoon, Sam.
The man that makes all the magic happen.
Good afternoon, Sam.
Well, good afternoon, Daryl. Thanks for being here. And folks, we have a different but an exciting and fun show today. But it's not just going to be fun and exciting. It's going to be educational. Because I guarantee you, your vocabulary will have increased by the time this show ends. Because we have someone that I just personally enjoy spending time with and talking to, a fellow Marine. We have former State Representative Bill DeWeese here with us today. Bill, welcome to the show.
Semper Fi.
Semper Fi, my friend. Now, hey, a lot of folks don't know, but Bill, you were the son of a small-town Dodge dealer and a homemaker, you know, and you graduated from Waynesburg High School back in 1968. And those were some tumultuous times.
And before the interview is concluded, let me tell you about when I played at Forbes Field and tell you a story about Mazeroski and DeWeese.
Oh, wow. Well,
just an interesting non-political reference.
Well, we're going to get to that, okay? You attended Wake Forest University, where you were elected student body president. So
and
you
graduated
were into
near the bottom of
ago.
My class. I'm like George Custer, only when I got in trouble, at least it wasn't lethal.
So you're like Joe Biden, but you're just admitting where you were in the class. Okay.
Oh, didn't take us long to start mixing it up.
No.
The donkey in the room.
And you graduated in 1972 with a Bachelor of Arts degree in history.
And joined the Marine Corps on graduation day.
Yep.
I graduated at noon and was in the Marines by 1.
Now, see, you and I, our
I'm
service,
a lot older.
Our service crossed because you were in from 1972 to 1975.
Yes.
I joined in 1975. I joined in December of 1975. I joined the Marine Corps. But you outranked me. I mean, you were first lieutenant. You know, and here I was. I mean, I was a lowly Lance Corporal. You know, I was one of the guys that actually did the work that you
We all
you
went to boot camp. We all went to boot camp.
Yes, we did, my friend. Oh, we might have some Paris Island stories too here, folks, before this is all over. Now, you after graduate or leaving the Marine Corps, you ended up becoming and getting sworn in as a member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, where you represented the 50th Legislative District on May 10th, 1976.
The death date of Stonewall Jackson. Not the same year, but the same day. Mm-hmm. May 10th. That's how I remembered it.
Well, and you know, now that followed the resignation of Donald Davis, and you must have done a good job because the people there reelected you to 18 more consecutive terms.
Yes, even after I was indicted.
You know, well.
And after I was convicted.
We're not going to talk about that stuff there, okay? Now, Bill was also the prime sponsor of legislation which designated part of the grounds of the state capitol as Soldier's Grove. He's always been a supporter of veterans. That bill, which became Act 75 of 1987, designated war memorials in honor of veterans from all major American conflicts. In 1992, Bill was the prime sponsor of legislation that required health insurance companies in the Commonwealth to cover child immunization costs, also known as Act 35. And Bill was also appointed chairman of the Judiciary Committee from 1987 to 1988, where he was elected to the leadership position of Democratic Whip in 1989 and was elevated to Democrat leader on January 23, 1990, due to the death of Speaker James Mandarino. Now, Bill also served as Democratic leader from 1995 to 2008 and Democratic Whip in 2009. So, while Bill took the oath of Speaker of the House of Representatives on January 5, 1993, among the policies he advocated for were tax and judicial reform, the advancement of civil rights, and the development of a state economic plan to unite business and labor and support the interests of rural Pennsylvania, the environment, and the arts. Bill, you have had quite an illustrious career, and I can't tell you how much I enjoy sitting down with you, talking to you, and learning from you. The degree of institutional knowledge that you possess, I mean, is unequaled.
Well, I got started young. And I was blessed to meet a lot of folks in the greater Pittsburgh area, even though my district was all of Green, and then three additional school districts, Albert, Gallatin, and Brownsville, over in Fayette County, and the Best Center School District in Washington County. But I was single for many, many years, and you can imagine the magnetizing effect toward my bachelorhood that the Golden Triangle was. Iridescent. So I spent a lot of time here, and I got interested in the arts and was placed on the board of Pittsburgh Ballet Theater, worked with Marty McGuinn, formerly
CEO of Mellon.
Of Mellon, relative to the public theater, Dick Simmons with the ATI, symphony, and really got involved with the Steelers and the Pirates, at least on the periphery, with the development of the new stadium plans in the late 90s and early 2000s, especially when some of the local political people showed signs of irremediable pusillanimity and wouldn't come out and vote for the stadiums. And I had to go to the Poconos and Erie and a few other places to grab the votes, and obviously became a favorite, at least for dinner once a year, of some of the potentates of the Pirates and some of the more scintillating names of the Steelers. So I've always loved Pittsburgh. I was born at McGee, by the way.
Wow.
And my dad was a steel worker before and after World War II, but became an automobile dealer in the early 50s. And my mother was a beautician. She did hair. They both left high school and went on with their careers. So I was the first one in my family to get to go to college. And the reason I went to Wake Forest was, and this is somewhat of a nice connecting, relative to Mazeroski, and we played in the WPIL championship series, and one of those games, the second to the last, was at Forbes Field, and I got two hits, but I let a ball go through my legs.
Uh-oh.
But nobody scored that inning. And I'd never played on a grass infield before.
Bill Buckner, you're not.
No. So anyway, we're at fantasy camp many years later with Howard Hanna, Billy Petragallo, and a variety of other people, and Mazeroski's at the table one night.
Wow.
And every night at fantasy camp is in the cafeteria, and it's very collegial, but one night you're supposed to go out and break bread just on your own with 6, 8, 10 people, and we were able to ensnare Mazeroski that night. Verdon was at another table, and Skinner, and Bob Veal, and you can—
legendary names.
Yes, from the 1960s.
Yes.
And Vernon Law.
Yep.
Anyway, Maz was there, and Howard Hanna, Hottie Hanna, raised his glass and said, I'd like to propose a toast to the two guys at this table that played second base at Forbes Field. And Maz had had a couple pops. Yep. He looked around, and I'm not going to repeat the exact declaration, but he was stupefied that somebody else at that table had played second base at Forbes Field. And when Howard Hanna said, no, DeWeese was there. It was only one game. It was a WPIL championship series. And he says, okay. But it did get me to Wake Forest because I had an offer to come down, not for a scholarship necessarily, but for books for the Chow line. And one of my teammates went to Duke, one went to William & Mary, and one went to East Carolina. I went to Wake Forest. We had a good team, but I was a good high school player. I was not qualified in any shape or form to play in the ACC at that level. I might have been able to play at Waynesburg or Junietta or Cal or Teal or Geneva. I'm at a smaller school, in a smaller setting, but my sophomore year, the coach did not invite me to come back out, nor should he have invited me. But it was a splendid experience. And I read a book called This Side of Paradise by Scott Fitzgerald, same author as The Great Gatsby. And This Side of Paradise was his years at Princeton before World War I. And that was my experience at Wake Forest. It was This Side of Paradise. I could not have been more blessed to go to a fine Southern setting. And the day I graduated, I joined the Marine Corps and went on to other things. But I had four marvelous years at Wake Forest.
Well, that's a fascinating story. And you're talking about the opportunities that weren't just presented to you, but were also presented to many of the other students, or the other fellow ballplayers that you played
with. I think they only had two scholarships. And somebody got one, and the other got divided into four or something.
Right.
But I never qualified. I could have if I'd have been a better player, but didn't work out that
way. Well, listen, I join you in that. You know, after I got out of the Marine Corps, I walked on to the University of Pittsburgh, the Panther football team, okay? And this is back in 1980. So here I am, come waltzing in as a freshman, wanted to walk on. And, you know, we were the preseason number one team in the country. You know, Danny Marino, that was his sophomore year. But, like, I was a defensive tackle. But the entire line that year, you had Hugh Green, Ricky Jackson, You were the defensive ends. Bill Neal, who went to the New York Giants, Greg Meiser, who got drafted by the Rams, and you had Jerry Boyarski, who'd gotten drafted by the Packers. Those were the guys that were there. Freshmen that I played with, right? Well, Jim Sweeney, you know, from Seton LaSalle, and played for, was drafted by Seattle. I played for Seattle, the Jets, and then the the Steelers. And then you had Bill Moss. You know, Bill Moss was all pro with the, he was the number one draft choice with the Kansas City Chiefs. So, you know, I didn't get to play except in some JV games, right? So listen, I commiserate with you. We had our brush with fame, you know, by being with some great players. But, you know, I don't have the athletic accolades either. So I share.
Our brush was tangential rather than central.
Yes. Yes. You know, I got to tease Danny Marino in the weight room because they had a Buddy Morris was a strength coach, and they had a board on the wall that charted, you know, it was like 200, 300 bench, 400 pound bench, you know, that kind of deal there. And one of the strongest guys on the team was Wayne DeBartolo, who's a dentist. You see his commercials are on television.
Oh, sure. Here,
in out of high school, I mean, into early into college, Wayne was benching like 420 pounds back in the day. You know, and I was up on the board. I was doing like 360. And again, this is, I was 220 pounds. But Danny Marino, someone had written his name in there, said Danny Marino, 205. Okay. So it was a lot of fun. But, you know, it was very enjoyable. And you just wish things might have been, you know, different. But I loved having the experience. It's part of life. You know, you have experiences and you learn from it.
Oh, absolutely.
And you move on, you know. And it provides, opens doors for opportunities. One of the gentlemen that I played with there, or I should say played that, but I was on the team, was Steve Fidel. And Steve was a linebacker. Was a very good linebacker in 1980. And I think he got drafted by the Steelers in the late rounds of the draft, but ended up tearing his Achilles. So never really got to play with the Steelers, but he went into business. And I ended up going to work for Steve and his company where I worked for 27 years. You know, so it's funny how those things, you know, all work out. But
one of the guys on the Wake Forest team, not baseball, but football, was Ed Bradley. And he graduated in 1972 and joined the Steelers and was on one of the Super Bowl teams.
Oh, yeah.
Ed Bradley of Wake Forest.
I remember. You know, so yes. So hey, enough about our athletic stuff. I mean, play.
Well, I have one more Wake Forest story,
Yeah.
And it's a Western Pennsylvania story, and you'll love this because the guy was a hot shot Republican. His name was Arnold Palmer.
Oh.
And at Tommy O'Brien's retirement party downtown, where Heinz Hall was taken over and scaffolding was brought in, and it was an elegant evening. I had driven in from Harrisburg. I was right there at the 11th hour and 59th minute. If the thing started at 7, I got there at 6:58. I ran up to get a beverage and head to the table, and there was one guy there, and it was Arnold Palmer at the bar. Uh-huh. I showed him my Wake Forest ring. Now, he's a Wake Forest guy. And I said, I had the privilege of attending there when you were president of the Alumni Association. And I said, now I'm blessed to be in the Pennsylvania legislature and Tom Ridge is kicking my ass. And Tom Ridge was governor. I was a minority leader.
Yes.
He smiled, grabbed his Chardonnay, headed back to the table, turned around and says, I'm glad he's kicking your ass because I'm a good Republican. So that's a true story. And by the way, that pretty much sums up my whole lifelong conversation with Arnold Palmer. But I've always been a fan before, during, and since.
Well, what a legend. I mean, look what he did for golf, you know, between him and Jack Nicklaus, you know, and then Tiger Woods.
Sure.
Right? But, I mean, these are names that have achieved phenomenal.
And looking at you and John right now, I'm thinking of Gary Player all dressed in black. And Gary Player, I think, is still amongst us. I think he's way up in his 90s.
I think so, yes.
And supposedly he still does innumerable push-ups at dawn. So he's a tough South African competitor. And I don't think that I'll ever be so hyperbolic as to say you remind me of Gary Player in every way, but your vestimentary certainly does.
Oh,
your
yes,
penchant for black.
You get that, folks? Well, Bill, they do say the black is a slimming color, okay? And while you talked about Gary Player doing a lot of push-ups, I'll tell you an exercise I didn't do enough of, and that was push-aways, okay?
Yes.
And I'll tell you, you're talking stories right here, folks. Here's one. When I got out of the Marine Corps back in 1980, you walked on at Pitt and ended up leaving Pitt. But UPS, they always put on extra drivers for the holiday. So I went to work for UPS and was out there doing this. And then there was a show. They used to have a show on KDKA where Steelers would come on. So I was invited to the show, went to the show, and John Kolb was there. And so I went and talked to John Kolb afterwards, and I was asking him questions about weightlifting. He invited me to come out with him and, you know, to lift one day. So I was like thrilled because these are guys that you're like your heroes.
Sure.
Incredibly strong, you know, the whole bit. They were all 500 pound benchers at the time. And so I eventually called John up, wasn't able to hook up with him at the, they used to train at the Red Bull, at the basement of the Red Bull restaurant.
Oh, on 19.
On 19 there.
Outside of Washington, PA. Yep.
So, so he invited me to come down to the stadium. And I went down and met him at Three River Stadium. Now, he hadn't announced his retirement yet, but he told me he was going to be announcing his retirement and taking the job as a strength coach with the Steelers. So I was asking him about some things that I could do, you know, and he was saying, he gave me a couple of exercises, and then he said you could do pushaways. I'm like, pushaways? And I'm thinking, I know every bodybuilding and powerlifting exercise there is. What's a pushaway? I said, what's a pushaway? He said, pushaway from the table.
Yeah.
You know? So I just saw John. He was at our Lincoln Day dinner here just in this past May.
And 2 years ago, wife, being a Republican, invited me, her driver, mm-hmm. and I saw John Kolb and his bride that night and had a nice 3 or 4 minute dialogue.
Yeah, so he was at the dinner, and I went up and I was telling the story, and we were both laughing about it. You know, so folks, there it is. And see, that's the difference here. Us Republicans, we tell the truth, you know, self-deprecating. Here's a story. No great shakes.
Oh, I didn't tell you I played first string at Wake Forest. I didn't tell you Earl Palmer loved me.
Bill, this is why I love you, man, because you're a straight shooter. You know, you're an honest guy.
Hell
know?
Yeah, I was even a straight shooter in front of the grand jury.
Well, I think we've all, you know, you're not the only one in here that's been in front of a grand jury, okay? I wasn't the target.
Yeah, so you had a more successful outcome.
Yes, I wasn't the target. Yes, thank you. Anyway, folks, I told you this was going to be entertaining, okay? I had no idea this is where this was going to go, but we talk about it. My friend, Jimmy Smith, you know, investment banker.
Related to Greenfield, Jimmy Smith.
Yeah, that's where their family's from, you know.
I do.
He had been friends with you, Nick Hayden, a lot of guys that
talked
I
to Nick
knew,
Hayden yesterday.
Knew you, you know,
yesterday. In fact, I have to.
We've had Nick on the show.
I have to share this apropos of Nick. A few months ago, my wife had a party for me at the casino in Washington County at the Meadows, and it was 10 years since I'd been released from the state penitentiary.
Mm-hmm.
So when you walked in to this room at Bisteca Steakhouse over to the side, there was a big sign, 10-year anniversary, release Deweese. And if my name had been Jones or Smith, it wouldn't have had the same resonance.
Right.
But I just really enjoyed the juxtaposition of release Deweese. So Mel Blunt, an old acquaintance from years ago, who came to Greene County on several occasions and made speeches for me back in my golden years. And he gave the invocation, and Nick Hayden was there, obviously Blunt, luminary of all-century, all-American,
right.
All-pro, Hall of Fame.
I mean, they changed the roles, but this guy was so dominant.
Yes, yes. Yep. And then Nick Hayden for Penn State's national championship
yep.
team, Philadelphia Eagles.
Well, went to the Raiders first. Raiders first.
I didn't remember. Thank you.
Then the Eagles.
Because I had
yep.
forgotten the pathway.
I think he was the third round draft choice of the Raiders, and then he went to work to play for Buddy Ryan with the Philadelphia
sure.
Eagles. Yep.
Sure. Well, the third football player that was in this group, and it was only five tables of six, 30 people. It was a very intimate evening, including two guys that had done life sentences that had been released. One was a juvenile lifer, and one's case had been overturned. We can talk about that next year when you bring me back. So there's three guys. The other one was a guy named Tony Bettino. Tony is an insurance guy and an investment guy, and he's down now in Peters Township. And so Tony played at Mon Valley High School. And when I grabbed the microphone and said thanks to everybody, I did talk about those gridiron heroes, Mel Blunt, All-American, All-Pro, Hall of Fame, Nick Hayden, Philadelphia Eagles, Oakland Raiders, and Tony Bettino, Mon Valley High. And just the bringing all that together in my lifetime has been very special, because my best friend now in the whole world is Tony Bettino. And I didn't even know him a few years ago until I my career had altered, as we all know, or at least you and I know, and John knows. I don't know about your listening audience, but I've had a wonderful life and lots of excitement. But I've got a whole bunch of new friends because I left Greene County after 66 years and moved into Washington County. And now I'm with the hero of the Mon Valley football team. I'm exaggerating, of course.
Of course. You know, well, Bill, that's what I like about you, man. You talk about, you know, crossing party lines. You know, I mean, you took it to a real extreme where you married a Republican.
Well, not only did I marry a Republican, but I married a Republican member of the state Senate. And with 13 million denizens of this broad-bosomed commonwealth, every state senator has 273,000 constituents. Well, so my wife, Camara Bartolotta, Republican state senator, represents all of Greene County, all of Washington County, and the southern frontier. Why say border when you can say frontier? It's from the Davy Crockett moments of my youth. They have one state senator who's a Republican, and obviously she married a Democrat. And I like to compare us, especially in a political milieu, which every time I see you, it's a political milieu. I don't get to use the word milieu very often. But anyway, here.
I think, folks, is that
French.
Is that M-I-L-I-E-U or there? I mean,
you know what George Washington said about his spelling? He said, my orthography is quaint, which is a very, very comparatively unusual way of saying I can't spell very well.
Well, he's forgiven because the wooden teeth.
Yes, yes, he was luminous. But anyway, back to Bartolotta and Deweese. I say young damsel because chronologically there's some differential. And the old character who did 3 years in the Marines, 36 in the House, two in the penitentiary, and 10 more as a consultant. And I compare myself, and wait till you hear the end of it, to James Carville and
Mary Matlin.
Mary Matlin.
Yes.
But I always say the big, big difference between Carville and Deweese is his IQ is about 40 points higher. Because notwithstanding the jaundice and the crinkled physiognomy that your face just exemplified, as a Republican potentate, I think James Carville's a freaking genius. But having said that, he was Bob Casey's campaign manager, Bob Casey Sr., when he ran for governor. A young man down in Arkansas named Bill Clinton, who was a congressional aspirant and an attorney general, wanted to run for president of the United States after becoming governor. He called up to Bob Casey, and James Carville went to Little Rock, and that's how that whole connection went on. And now Carville's a household name among Democrats.
Well, I wasn't knocking Carville there. I was just trying to. I felt that you weren't giving yourself the credit that we're due. You know?
No. Well, in the parlance of the Harlem Renaissance, I was very, very blessed to be able to shuck and drive for that. In fact, the shucking and driving stopped with the grand jury. Notwithstanding the fact that I pled not guilty. And, well, again, to the degree that you want to talk, yep, we'll talk about anything.
Well, folks, look, you've heard me say this before. When you run for elected office, it requires a number of skill sets. One, you to be successful, you have to be able to govern, okay? And that takes the ability to be able to build alliances, consensus. You need to be able to work with people. You know, the other thing is, in order to get elected, you need to be able to connect with people. You need to be good at retail politics. You hear it referred to as shaking hands and kissing babies. But really it is. And as you're hearing from our esteemed guest, you know, Bill Deweese, Bill, I mean, excelled, you know, at that. And it's one of the reasons that he served 18 terms, you know, in the state house there. So, Bill, congratulations to yourself. I told you, I heard all about you. I met you up in New York. The Pennsylvania Society came across and you were telling the story. You have to tell that in the next segment. We're going to have to talk about the Marine Corps Commandant and the large metal desk. But, you know, but that's going to be the next segment.
And here. Oliver North.
Yes, yes.
My commanding officer at one point.
You know, so when did you serve under North?
I was, my first day happened, I should say.
We got
say
2 minutes
was.
Here before the segment.
Real fast, okay. On Ollie North, I went to boot camp September 23rd, 72, graduated right before Christmas from OCS, and then went back January 5 or 10 for the 6-month basic school program. And this Hollywood handsome star of the basic school at the time, which is the finishing school for young lieutenants, walks out onto the stage to meet 253 of us in this big auditorium. He had the Silver Star, and he had a reputation even then that sizzled.
Right.
And we thought when he was a young captain, he would be commandant of the Marine Corps. Make a long story abbreviated, he became, or he was, our tactics instructor for 253 of us in the field and in the classroom. So for 6 months, he was in our presence virtually every day or two or three, and we all felt we knew him. One day, as we conclude this segment, real early in the morning, 0600, we're out there in sweat clothes, ready to do a three-mile run, and he walked out, and he says, "Where's Deweese?" And I said, "Sir, yes, sir." And I stepped out in, amongst the anonymity,
right,
because you know, in the Marine Corps,
yes,
especially as young people, we want to be anonymous.
Yep.
He said, "Somebody at the bar told me last night you voted for McGovern. Is that right?" I said, "Sir, yes, sir." Big smile. And he said, "I just was curious." That was like Arnold Palmer. I really didn't talk to him very often.
Folks, we're going to take a break here, and we'll be right back after the break. But this is Sam DeMarco, your host for The Elephant in the Room on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. Be right back. Welcome back to The Elephant in the Room. It's your host, Sam DeMarco. In our first segment here, we're joined in studio by Bill DeWeese, former Speaker of the House and a longtime 18-term Democrat and state representative here. And Bill, we were talking about in the first segment, and we talked about a lot of stuff. We ended the first segment. You were talking about Ollie North, but you have always told me a story that I enjoyed when we talked about the Marine Corps Commandant coming to visit you, and I think you were in Japan at the time.
Well, I was stationed over there for a year, but this was near when I was ending my career, and we were attending a Wounded Warriors banquet at the Hyatt along Delaware Avenue and the Delaware River in Philadelphia, 40 tables of 10, 400 people. And Joe Dunford, who was, I believe, assistant commandant at the time, was the keynote speaker. And he didn't eat. He went to all 40 tables and spent like a minute or a minute and a half. And we had Wounded Warriors at probably half the tables. At my table, there was not a Wounded Warrior. Primarily, those tables were made up of business executives and people that were making contributions to the Wounded Warriors. And I was a guest of Philadelphia Electric. So I believe I was the only veteran at the table. And I had a blue blazer, gray slacks, and a very little lapel pin, about the size of the end of your pinky finger, but the Eagle Globe and Anchor. Mm-hmm. And he came over to me and he said, "What'd you do in the Marine Corps?" And I said, "Sir, I was only in 3 years, no combat. I was in the mud, but it was in Virginia and they were firing blanks." He says, "Well, what'd you do?" I said, "Well, I flew LMDs off of Okinawa." And he looked at me quite quizzically and he said, "I've been in the Marine Corps for 37 years. What's an LMD? And I said, "It's a large metal desk." I said, "I was the logistics officer for the KC-130 Hercules aircraft. I was in charge of jet fuel and parts and avionics." He said, "LMD," with a twinkle in his eye as he was going to the next table. He turned around and he says, "I always love it when a Marine doesn't try to puff up his resume." And then Joe Dunford went on to be chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Yep.
Under both Obama and Trump.
Yep. Well, I remember, Joey Jones, who's the gentleman on Fox News, the veteran back in Obama. This was, I think, 2012. So it was a 2012 State of the Union. I was invited to go to attend the State of the Union address as a guest of Congressman Murphy. So I went down there, I'm sitting next to Johnny Jones, humbling experience. He was still in the Marine Corps, had yet to be discharged, but he was working for the congressman from Georgia, working on issues like down at Camp Lejeune.
Sure.
They were talking about the water issues and things back then. But General Amos at the time
was the
commandant of the Marine Corps. But his wife was sitting behind us, was talking to Johnny that, and he introduced me to her and the whole bit. And that was an incredible experience.
Sure.
I heard Marty Griffin earlier this week was on the radio and he was talking about asking folks, but what was the most secure or security conscious event thing that they've ever attended? And they were asking someone, one of the, Jessica Guay, you know, if she'd been to rallies and things like that, he talked about the Super Bowl. I can tell you, I have never seen anything like the security they have for the State of the Union.
Yeah.
I mean, I was staying at a hotel in Washington, D.C., and just on the walk over there, you know, at every corner, there were groups of 8 to 10 officers with AR-15s. They were grouped in between the blocks. You know, when we got there, you know, I met with Congressman Murphy, and he took me down through a tour of Statutory Hall and was showing me around a little bit. But, you know, you saw the teams of SWAT guys coming through, you know, and they had the rifles and that they were carrying them in the long bags. You had the dogs. They were doing, I you know, nothing
well,
on
the entirety of the American
can, you can
government
see that, yes.
is in there at that one moment.
There, I've never seen anything like it.
I'm sure aviation assets were also at play.
Oh, certainly. You know, and when I left, you know, on the way out, we got to see Obama coming back his motorcade, you know, and I mean, he's just going a few blocks there, but he hits like 60 miles an hour. You know, I snapped some pictures and I said, but they're just a blur because they're moving so fast, you know, but yeah, that was just a incredible, incredible event there. But anyway, listen, this is a politics show. We're talking about this stuff. You know, it's something.
I'll come back next year.
Yeah.
I told a friend of mine, he said, what are you doing? He said, you're going on this radio program with a Republican chairman. I said, well, I think he's already interviewed every interesting Republican from Ligonier to Youngstown, Ohio. So I guess he's starting out with the Democrats who are no longer in trouble.
Oh, listen, hey, we've had a number of Democrats on Keith, or not Keith Smith, but Jimmy Allenbogen, who served with me on county council. Jimmy's been here. He's been a guest. You know, we are an equal opportunity.
I know him.
He called me. He called me earlier. We want to give our folks the ability to hear from fascinating people. You know, and you know, you certainly have a storied name. And I'm not talking about the negative. You know,
consequences. Hey, I pled not guilty.
Well, you know, I mean, look, we.
Just so everybody knows, it was theft of services. I have never heard of that before. And I'm the only person, to the best of my knowledge, ever put in a state facility for that alleged infraction. And it normally would have been an ethics violation. It was that the charge was that my staff was doing campaign work during the work day. Mm-hmm. And if I'd have taken a plea bargain, the recommended sentencing guideline was 9 months probation. But I fought them for 5 years, and I did not prevail. And the experience that I've had subsequently has been blessed in many, many ways, including this radio moment. I get a kick out of life, and I flourished in that rather unusual setting. And you juxtapose the Marine Corps and politics and the slammer, and then married to this nice Republican conservative lady, and I get to dabble in politics, and I guess that's what I'm doing right this mm-hmm. moment. I didn't know John till the other night. Get to know John, get to know you a little bit better. But when I saw you in New York, I just saw the lapel pin, and I didn't fall in love with you, but I I thought...
It's a good thing you're not my type, but hey.
Well, you know. I thought, hey, he's a Marine, so I can have a friendship with this guy, just like I can have a friendship with Cameron Bartolotta, who was Republican.
Yeah. Well, you were also a good friend of Jim Marotti's.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So speaking
yes.
of the Marine Corps is a brotherhood that extends far beyond, you know, political boundaries.
Jim Roddy was the first one that outed me and Camera at an event down at the casino mm-hmm. in 2015. We didn't start dating until 2016, but I was in hot pursuit, figuratively and literally. And he was at the microphone, and I was sitting at her table, and I'd whispered something to him, something that was pregnant with jocularity and Marine Corps humor and probably more than a carapace of sexuality. And he goes to the microphone, and he said, I just want to tell everybody that I think Bill DeWeese and Cameron Bartolotta are something for the future. So he really postulated.
Pushed
yes. Yes. And I want to say this, and may he rest in peace, and that is not a bromide. May he rest in peace. He was a recon Marine.
Exactly.
He did not have a large metal desk. He was in the field. Now, he was not in a combat setting, to the best of my knowledge, but he was a real, real advanced young lieutenant infantry officer, and I had the highest respect for him.
Well, he and I would talk. I took and drove him to Harrisburg one time for a meeting, and he was telling me about a mission he had. And we're back in the day, the Iron Curtain, they had a Navy jet that had gotten shot down or crashed, behind what would be considered, enemy lines. And Jim and his unit had been inserted via submarine to go and find this pilot and rescue him.
That's what Marine Recon would have done,
exactly.
Yes.
And he talked about the experience of going in and hunting for this guy because they went in through Greece and they're all trying to get, I think it might have been Hungary, and they were looking for, but to get this guy out. And then talked about finding him and then extracting him, right? And so that's why I always told people, I said, hey, Jim doesn't talk about it, but he was a badass Marine. Yeah. This wasn't just a ceremonial type thing. He was the real deal. And what an esteemed individual. My pleasure to have
gotten
to know him.
Had the wherewithal, the natural instincts to reach across the aisle. And we're not having enough of that, no. Sam DeMarco. We have to turn down the heat. And I just think that Democrats and Republicans in the Congress and in the legislature and here locally, it would be so much better if people just had dinner together from time to time. Mm-hmm. Back when I was a youngster, and I was born in 1950, but I started paying attention to this when I was 12, 14, 16 years old. Doc Morgan was a mm-hmm. congressman from Fredericktown, and he was chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. And during the Vietnam War, he would have been among the top generals of the U.S. Congress. He'd have been a top 6-8 most powerful individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So I was following him, and I got down to D.C. a couple times, and I had a relationship just a tiny acquaintanceship with him. It got developed more when I went to the legislature. But in Washington, D.C., back in the 50s and 60s, and by the way, Gerald Ford's son and I went to Wake Forest together. And if we get a chance, I'll tell you about the moment I had breakfast with Gerald Ford in Washington, D.C. many years later. But they went to D.C. They would work together. Then at night, they'd have dinner together. I'm talking about Democrats and Republicans, mm-hmm. North, South, East, West. Then they'd play a round of golf on Sunday. Their wives would be playing bridge, or they would be together. Their kids with the swimming pool. It just was a different kind of world where Democrats and Republicans got together and spent time together. And things have evolved that's no longer the case. But Camera and I, my wife, Camera Bartoletta, who represents the 46th Senatorial District, and her politics are different than mine. She's a conservative. I'm not. But I tell people the only two things I ever did that were conservative were join the Marine Corps and the NRA. But back to, we are out probably two or three times a month with different members of the House and Senate. Mm-hmm. We were out with Rob Mercury one night recently. I mean, you just go down the list. I mean the whole list.
Right.
Just think what I'm going to say, from Inamorata to Mercury and everybody in between. And it's civil. And if there's anything, and I really take my hat off to you for the civility that you try to inject into the process. And you're a hardcore, tough Marine Corps partisan Republican, and that's okay. But the bottom line is we're all Americans, we're Pennsylvanians, it's a commonwealth, and I don't think we can do enough to inject at least socialization in a bipartisan way with each other, because it just will make a better system.
Well, I think, I'm not an attorney, so, what you find with many political figures.
Nor am I, but I slept at the Holiday Inn Express or wherever,
Me too, yeah.
They had a vocabulary chart in the shower.
But I thought you stole a dictionary from the library, but either way. But no, look, my career was in sales. So in sales, you need to be able to go into an account and to be able to talk to the different stakeholders. And many of them, sometimes their interests were different. But you had to find a way to bring everybody together, to get them to agree, to get the signature on a contract,
to be able to do business with them. So, you know, I recognize that if I'm ever going to be, or anybody's going to be successful, you have to be able to work with people. You have to be able to build consensus. You can't do that if you attack them personally, okay? Because people never forget that. We can disagree on issues. You know, I mean, we don't agree with our spouses much of the time, or they with us, right? But you don't attack someone personally because those are things that they never forget. So, you know, even with former county executive Rich Fitzgerald, he and I had a good relationship. I felt that he told me the truth. We didn't agree on everything, certainly not, but we were able to communicate. So I told him if we were able to communicate and I was able to talk to him, he was able to talk to me, but he never had to worry about waking up in the morning, picking up the newspaper and seeing some attack from me in the newspaper, okay? And we were able to carry that on for 8 years. If something was coming up in the county, if there was an issue, he would pick up the phone and call me and say, Sam, I want to give you a heads up on this. We're going to be introducing this. And I'd have the opportunity to ask questions about it, to get my answers, to have any concerns, you know, allayed.
I think your mentor, Jim Roddy, had a similar relationship with Fitzgerald.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when Jim was a county executive and Rich was on council. But you have to have that, you know, otherwise you end up fighting. Now, let me ask you a question. Because the gerrymandering, were things as bad, you know, earlier in your career with districts as far as considered being gerrymandered? Because I think that has contributed to the polarization that we see in
politics.
Oh,
there's no doubt. In fact, I think that's a grand slam home run of an observation. The worst thing about the polarization is that gerrymandered districts. And to make it very plain, there's 435 United States congressional districts, and I think there are only about 20 or 25 that would be considered in play right now. Mm-hmm. There may be a couple more, but out of 435, I think you have about 400 which are not very contested, and it's easy to retreat to your corner or your silo or whichever metaphor you want to engender and just raise hell. And that's why things aren't getting done. But I would have to say, objectively, the gerrymandering. And guess what? I was guilty of the gerrymandering a couple times. I was on the five-person panel in 2001 and retrospectively in 1991, because as your audience probably knows, the census is in the decennial year. And then the next year, 01, or, well, it's always going to be 0-something, not 0-something, but there's going to be a 1 at the end. Then you do the legislation for the 02 or 22, right, 32 election. And when I remember David Myernick of Ross Township, his district was such that it was malleable. He had been voting with the Republicans, and it was a rough and tumble setting in Harrisburg back in the day. This was 20 some years ago, so two decades ago, and his district was modulated very aggressively one evening, and he never forgave me. In fact, we were this will make you smile, Sam. We were at a retirement dinner of legislative members alumni. And he had the microphone, and he was lamenting the fact that I had modified his district irreparably, and he didn't run again because it was just gone. But then he said at the end, "But I never went to jail, Juice." So I mean, it's a rough and tumble business. But at the same time, if you're blessed as you are, young fella, if you're blessed with a sense of humor, and a little bit of common sense, let alone a lot of common sense, you can navigate. And I think humor is something that a lot of people leave out. But if you have that, no matter what the setting, but especially in politics, it's quintessential to have a sense of humor.
Well, you know what, Bill? You talk about sense of humor and you talk about common sense, and I think both of us have that. Something else I think both of us have, though, was courage. Okay? And I'm going to use this current debate that's going on right now here locally about the Nippon Steel U.S. Steel merger. I believe that that is the absolute right thing to do for U.S. Steel, for their workers, their employees, the employees' families, and for the region as a whole. But there are a number of elected officials who are afraid to stand up and speak out because they're afraid of facing the wrath of the union. You know, even though the union has just been found, I mean, on Wednesday, arbitration decision was announced. You know, 3-0 unanimous decision that U.S. Steel and DuPont Steel had met the requirements of the business labor agreement, and they found in U.S. Steel's favor, okay? What it did was it showed that the union had been in their communications, had not been telling the truth, you know, to their employees or their public, or their employees, excuse me, and their public communications as to the truth of what DuPont Steel had been offering, you know, and what was being debated. And so, you know, right now we have not just elected officials here, but you also have, I mean, many of my friends in the unions, you know, now is the time. Now is the time for every employee of U.S. Steel who wants a future here in Pittsburgh. If you support the deal, stand up and be heard. You know, every elected official, if you support the deal, stand up and be heard. You know, every union leader, if you support the deal, stand up and be heard. Look, if you're a union leader and you don't want to take and deal with the wrath, you don't have to come out publicly, but pick up the phone. Call Governor Shapiro's office. Call Bob Casey's office. Call John Fetterman's office and tell them that you believe that this is the right thing for the community and that they should take and, you know, approve this deal so we can get this thing done. And, you know, this is a bipartisan thing. We have some Republicans and Democrats who are both united to get the deal done. And also we have Republicans and Democrats. Both Trump has said he was against it. I don't believe that he's been briefed on the details or understands it. Harris today, you know, came out and doubled down on her opposition to it in her visit to Pittsburgh on Monday. You know, the folks that met her at the airport was Austin Davis, Lieutenant Governor, Sarah Innamorato, the county executive, and then Dave McCall, the international president of the USW. So I'm not surprised that she's doing this because she thinks it's going to help her win an election. You know, but I'm afraid, well, I'm not afraid, I guess I should be happy, that I believe that the folks in the Mon Valley, whose jobs are on the line, you know, may reject her.
I think,
know, because of that.
I think that if this decision is, if the jobs are still here and not in Arkansas on Halloween, I think that after the election, there will be a change of heart. And I think that people will realize that we have to do something to maintain this U.S. Steel presence here in town. My wife, by the way, would agree with you. And I'm inclined to agree with you. But it certainly is above my pay grade, and I'm not involved in the issue. But I certainly would agree with your analysis of it. And I don't want thousands and thousands of jobs to end up in Arkansas when they should be in our Western Pennsylvania setting. And I think that the arbitration that you just described that's so recent will jostle people's thought processes. And then I think is the way it is, just the way it is. After the election, I think it's going to be somewhat different. And maybe it was you or another friend of mine who said that the United States of America invested billions and billions of dollars in the Japanese infrastructure and their defense forces and their cultural world and commercial dynamics in the 40s, 50s, 60s, all the way to the present. And they are among our most unyielding and stalwart allies. In fact, I just heard this morning on the radio that a Japanese warship had made its way through the Taiwan Straits just with ships from New Zealand and Australia to show the Red Chinese that this was an international waterway. So they being the Japanese, are taking a lead in that part of the world as one of our allies. That's just another part of this matrix where I think they're our friends, they're our allies. We can't be xenophobic, we can't be jingoistic. We have to think Nippon Steel and the United States of America, the U.S. Steel, can have a marriage, and men and women that work there can get good union wages. I don't quite see all of the tentativeness other than, which you've already outlined, the politics of the moment from former President Trump right down through to some of our good friends in the Steelworkers Union. But I think that's going to alter – And again, I'm not here to prognosticate, although I am, that after the election, I think there's going to be a shift.
Well, listen, I certainly hope so. You know, I mean, I get, look, former President Trump, you know, is a strong and strident America First president. I mean, he cares about this country. He wants to bring manufacturing and business back here and jobs back to America, jobs that we've lost, you know, with NAFTA and many of these other, bringing China into the World Trade Organization and things of that nature. But Japan, as you said, is one of our strongest and most stalwart allies. We base a 7th Fleet there. We have 22,000 sailors there.
I spent a year there in the Marine Corps.
Yes. And they still haven't forgiven us for that. Okay. But we trust them with the F-35. We trust them with the Patriot missiles. Right? We could certainly trust them to invest $17+ billion and to help us make better steel products and to provide a future for the employees and their families in the Mon Valley. Bill, as always.
Is it over?
We're there, man. As always.
Sliding into home.
Yes. When we start talking, man, it just rolls off the tongue. So, hey, I'm going to give you 60 seconds to say whatever you'd like to say to our listeners, and go ahead.
I'll repeat what I said earlier because I think it's worth it. Civility and socialization among township officials, county officials, state elected folks in the legislature, Congress people, from Shapiro right down to the county council. I really believe that Democrats and Republicans should start having dinners together and start playing some golf together and start going to Little League games together and spending time together. And I doff my hat. I like little four-letter words like D-O-F-F. I take my hat off to Sam DeMarco for having the effort and the ability to reach out across the aisle and bring people together, because I think we're going to have a better government and a better national experience if we do so.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you so much for joining us, Bill, on the show today. Really do appreciate it. Folks, as always, until next week, this is Sam DeMarco, your host and the elephant in the room, WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. Have a great weekend.